Accession number 19068, Reel 4.
Mr. Kincheson, Reel 4.
And even, you know, having to go on to the boat drill and that, which was one of the very important things on the voyage. And but you know, thank goodness, not any of that bothered me at all. I just didn't think about the bad things, when we first went out from Liverpool it was so misty and that you couldn't hardly see anything, but when you got really out to sea and that, and I mean, it got rough, and I must have, and you thought to, I did think to myself, well, I don't know, this looks pretty terrible out here, but I mean, it wasn't. It just didn't bother me, and that made life so much easier, really.
Were you seasick on the ship?
No, I wasn't. No, I saw plenty that were, but I wasn't. No, I wasn't seasick. I don't say that, at a time or two, especially when we went through the Bay of Biscay and it really was rough, you know, and I just didn't really fancy the food. It put me off the food, but I thank goodness I wasn't sick. But lots of chaps were getting up and rushing off, and it was a bit of a mess nearly everywhere. But there you are.
So there was a good deal of excitement around, really.
Oh yeah, there was. Yes, yeah, and it was funny. We had the hammocks, you know, slept in the hammocks, and you slept, you know, sort of head to toe, and you had a good whiff of somebody's cheesy feet and that sort of thing, you know. But to a young person, it was just a part of life. It didn't bother me. And there was one thing I did like on the ship, but both going out and coming home, the bread, you know, they get the lovely cooked bread from the ship's galley was lovely, and all in all, the food wasn't too bad at all, so we didn't really have too much to complain about.
Did you know where you were heading?
No, we didn't really have a clue. No, we didn't, it wasn't until we got to. We were the first, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I was late going out to Burma, going out abroad, but I think we were the first convoy to go through the Suez Canal after they'd cleared it, and they'd had the victories and that out in the Middle East and so forth, and they'd got the canal cleared good enough that they could get the ship in through. And I'm pretty certain that we were the first convoy to go through the canal when it has been cleared, that was what was that, January 44, that's right, 44.
And the name of the ship?
And the name of the name of the ship was the Strath Eden. I thought what a lovely ship, and the only thing it used to they did in the voyage they did test the guns at time to it. They had one big gun, I forget now whether it was at the I'm not a sailor, whether it was the fore or aft, you know, but they had, and then they had the anti-aircraft guns and they tested them out two or three times, and when they fired the big gun, it certainly shook the ship, you know, but thank goodness it wasn't action, it was practice. And but we sailed through the Suez, and that was interesting. There was all sorts of bits and pieces laying up on the side, or just cleared to the side, just about enough room for the ship to get through, you know. And then roughly what, about halfway through the canal, you got like the lakes at the, and there was some Italian warships in there that were laid up in there. I remember the Italian warships, and then we in Port Said, it was quite amusing. You had the what they call them, the bumboats, I think, used to come with the goods and the people, you know, and of course they wanted to put the basket up, and you put your money in before you got the goods and all that. But it was quite amusing. And then the children, if you threw a silver coin down, and how they would dive down in the water and get the coins, and that all made life more interesting. And we took on quite a lot of sailors from there, and it always interested me that some of them had been in submarines, and they said that they would sooner be in submarines than on surface ships. Which surprised me a bit, but they said, "Oh, they got a much smoother ride, and they thought it was much safer, really." So that was quite interesting, and we moved on, and they said they were going to India, and that was the first indication that we would be going to Burma, really. And from there we went on to Port Said. To Suez, not Port, we kind of sailed out of Port Said and went to Suez, and there we anchored up there and took on quite a lot of American troops. Yes. Going back on the trip through to Port Said. The convoy, when it left Liverpool and formed up, we had the destroyers and different Royal Naval boats to escort the convoy. It was quite a big convoy, and so really we thought, well, we're protected, and travelled on quite well. And the shipping then was much less vulnerable than it had been. I mean, the Royal Navy had got right on top of the job, and they took us through very well. We had one or two sort of alarms where we we had to scuttle out of bed at night, out of the hammocks at night, and take up the positions for the on the boat drill positions. But you know, thank goodness that, as I said, the worst of that sort of thing was over then, and we travelled out really very well. That they had to sort of zigzag at different times, but it was luckily we made it without any problems, and it was not nice to get into to Port Said and see all the different happenings, and as I say we went on through the we stayed there and refueled the boat and took on different ones, and I remember we did have come out with us, and they disembarked at Suez, was at Port Said, was the Palestine police people, and I don't know that they didn't prove very very popular somehow. The troops didn't get on with them very well, but anyway, that was all part of the job. From Port Said, we went on through the Suez Canal. I think we were probably the first convoy to go through after clearing. They had got a lot of stuff dragged up onto the sides, and that it was quite interesting. And we went along through the canal to and then to Port Suez, where we anchored up and took on there quite a number of American troops, and they came through to Bombay with us, and we had a very nice journey. It was lovely to be able to go up on the decks at night and sleep, and we got quite friendly with some of the Americans, but certainly wasn't in their league. They had plenty of money. They were gambling for all they were worth. I don't think really I'd ever seen so much money in my life, but they seemed to have card scores and different things going, and the money, they seemed to just have it in great, almost armfuls. But it made us feel really the poor relations. But anyway, we got along with them well, and we travelled to Bombay, and it was all very happy, and we docked in Bombay in the afternoon, and then we were told a certain number of us were selected as to be on the quayside when they let the baggage off, and we were there very busy watching the baggage being dropped down, and then having to get it out of the net, sorting it out, and a sergeant or RSM, I think it was, from the regimental police came in there, and he said to us, he said, "Oh, you don't do that," he said. He said, "Come with me, I'll get you some dockers, dock workers," and they came round there to the. They were all. This was in the evening time, they didn't start dropping the baggage off until the evening, and we went round round the back of some cargo, and there was these dockers there fast asleep, Indian chaps, and he very soon hustled them up, and they came round with us, and all we had to do then, anything that was ours, we just had to point to it, and they had to pick it up and stack it to one side. And it was quite funny. He said to us, "When now you're in this country," he said, "you don't do the work; these people do it." But being young and not having traveled the world at all, it was quite an eye opener. And I thought to myself, "Well, really, that doesn't seem quite right to me." But anyway. That was my start to India, and I thought, well, it's giving them work, but they were very very strong with them, the authorities, I thought. But you'd live and learn, and in some cases, I think it was how it had to be. But it was an eye opener, really. And then from there, when they all disembarked, and our draft with some others, we went to the big British base reinforcement camp at Doolally, and we was there for about two or three weeks, and we had a very easy time. Nobody really bothered us, and to have the nappy walla come and shave you as you laid in bed, and pay him a couple of annas or so to shave you, and the char walla coming round, fruit walla, and all the they had I think it was called Dersey for the tailors, and that everything really seemed quite good. We didn't get very much money, but it was surprising with their sort of prices how far your money did go. And we had two or three weeks there, just waiting, really. We had one or two duties that we had to do in the camp, such as probably clean up in the dining halls or different things, but nothing very much. And then we went from there, we went up into the Bhopal state to the I think it was the 20th Royal Fusiliers, and to a jungle training brigade, and that was very very hot. It was very 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 hot there, and the going was tough. They really trained you for the jungle warfare, and I know that for a time we was having to take, I think it was about 3 or 4 pints of salt water a day, and after a time, all our jungle green and the webbing, all turned white. Instead of being green, we had white webbing, and our trousers and tunics was white, but. It was a horrible thing drinking this salt water, but they said, "Oh, you know, we've got to drink it." They used to have officers standing. They had it at the chatty pots with it in at the end of the dining hall, and as you went in, you had to drink this water, and so they stood over you and made you drink it. But it was all for the good, I suppose. But I can certainly well remember that. And the train in there, as I've just said, was good. We had a river at the back of the camp, the Nevada River, and we used to train there quite a bit, and it ain't so far, couldn't go right across because it was too deep and too wide, but we used to go out to a certain extent, make a raft out of bamboo, and then put our equipment, just have a pair of shorts on, and put all our equipment and that into our grain sheet and do it up so that we went out as it would be as you were practicing a river crossing. And that was one thing, and we had one officer there, he was from the Bucks Regiment, a lieutenant who was in charge of us one day, and we were out there all day, and when we come back in at night, having not long been in India really, and we really wasn't used to the heat, and we had some chaps that were so badly burnt that they just had to go away into hospital. It was so bad. But
you mentioned that you wore shorts. How has your uniform changed once you docked in Bombay?
We had it issued at Doolally, the uniform, but luckily we didn't have the topis. We had the bush hats. As soon as we got to Bombay, we had bush hats, which was good because the topis were, you know, very. We didn't like them at all, really, and obviously for that sort of, you know, doing that sort of thing, they wasn't suitable anyway.
Could you describe what a topi looks like?
A topi is more like a bowl shaped, more like a helmet thing, and got a bit of a brim, but it was made. It's the sort of thing that the troops stationed in India in that pre-war used to wear, and the bush hat only really came in for the warfare. The Australians always wore bush hats, and that, and I think it copied their pattern really. But the topi wasn't a suitable thing. It was good to keep the sun off and keep the head cool, but it wasn't a really suitable thing for, you know, tracking about through the jungle and that sort of thing. No. One little incident that I'd like to bring up that I can always remember, while we were with the Royal Fusiliers, we were going out on a scheme one day, and platoon was formed up. Our platoon sergeant was there, and he was saying, "You know, you've got to have this and that, and make sure everything's ready." And he said to one of our chaps, Bob Simmons, his name, and he said to him, he said, "And you, Simmons, can carry the Bren gun." And Bob looked at him and he said, "What, me, Sergeant, carry the Bren gun?" He said, "I'm not a Bren gunner." He said, "I'm a ballroom dancer." And the sergeant, he flew into a rage, and I wouldn't like to repeat what he said, but I've never forgot that. And a funny thing, but when we was in action, and sometime after we've been in action a while, and Bob got shot in the hand, and I wasn't with him, but I was told this by some of his chums that were with him, and Bob said, "Oh, well, that's a good thing." He said, "I can go home now." He said, "I'll see you back in Blighty." we went then from the jungle training brigade with the Royal Fusiliers. We went then to Poona Malee, which was just outside of Madras, and joined there. That's where we joined the 2nd Battalion of the Royal Barks, and we were there for only a few weeks with them, very short time, but it was just interesting. I went into Madras once or twice, but the heat there was terribly sticky and horrible. You all had prickly heat, and it was not very pleasant. But we moved from there, and then we went way back, and went. The battalion moved by train, and we went to Nasik, a place called Nasik, which really not so terribly far away from Dulali. So really, we wasn't terribly far from Bombay, and there the division, the 19th Indian Division, was really getting mobilised or up together to preparing to go into Burma, and we had you know, busy time training and learning all the latest jungle tactics that we could possibly learn. And then they said one day, "Oh, my pal Ted Nock and I and a few other chaps," they said, "Oh, you're going to Bangalore to go on a muleteer's course." And so we went there, and to Bangalore. We went to the Indian Royal Army Service Corps animal transport depot there, and we had 3 weeks there. I think it was 3 weeks we had there for this course, and it was very interesting. I remember I was very impressed with the place, the animals, the horses that they had, and that. And they had some mules there, and it was all kept beautiful. And the commanding officer obviously was an Englishman, and he was very good to us. He apologised to us that he didn't have a canteen for us, but he said he would get it laid on that we could get cups of tea and donuts every morning. So he certainly looked after us, and it was a very good, interesting course. And both Ted and I, having been used to the farm life, we were just suited there with the with the animals, and it was interesting. We learned well. They ran through everything, but they we didn't learn it, but showed us the shoeing, putting the shoes on the feet of the horses and on the mules, and then you know it was a case of the grooming and the sort of keeping the animals fit and the harnessing them and the everything in general really, and so when we came back we really could join our battalion soon after, or when we got back, soon after we got back, that's it, we had the mules come, and then